Thank you. I'd like to tell you some recent theoretical work on localization of wave over randomly rough bed. I'll explain the word localization shortly. First of all, there's some motivation for this problem. Of course, you've heard a lot about wave modeling, and nonlinearity is very, very important. And of course, there's dissipations, in particular in shallow water. In addition to breaking, bottom friction is something that's very important, of course. And I would like to know whether, in addition to bottom friction due to viscosity, frictional losses, whether there's some other mechanism that could also be important in some places. Okay, I want to look at, in particular, the scattering process, energy due to scattering losses, radiation scattering, by irregularities on the bottom. Of course, this is not a new problem. For slowly varying bathymetry, the geometrical optics of refraction has been developed for a long time, first for linearized waves and then for slightly nonlinear waves. And for fast-varying bathymetry, there are lots of numerical methods that can be and can in principle be applied to the scattering and diffraction of single bodies or a few bodies whose magnitudes are comparable to the wavelength, for example, or to a sunken, or a scattering by a sunken ship, for example. Now, there for many obstacles, of course, the problem of multiple scattering is somewhat more complicated. For regular depth variations, for example, periodic sandbars, Bragg resonance, that sort of thing, you can have both theoretical method of computation as well as a more nonlinear numerical computation. Now, I'm interested in randomly varying bottom, and this is related to a term that's used in theoretical physics, in particular in condensed matter physics, quite widely, localization, associated with the physicist named Philip Anderson. And motivation was by an experiment done at University of Marseille by some physicists some years ago, and they performed the following experiment. This is a very shallow laboratory tank, perhaps not too much longer than this table. It's 4 meters long, no, longer than this table, and it's 40 centimeters wide and 1 to 4 centimeters deep, very shallow. And they constructed these stepwise discontinuity on the bottom, but the amplitude as well as the wavelength are random. They used altogether 58 steps. Then they've generated rather long waves, a small amplitude long waves, and discussed the wave propagation properties. And these physicists were stimulated by their knowledge in condensed matter physics, in solid-state physics, and they performed these experiments despite the fact that this is a highly idealized cryosonic geometry, probably not very frequently encountered in oceanography, and also because these steps will create a lot of vortex shedding and so forth. It's a very complicated geometry. But nevertheless, they have qualitatively found the following phenomena. In other words, for very different frequencies, they always find that waves are attenuated so that essentially the waves do not penetrate to the very far end. Okay? This phenomena is close to that of the so-called Anderson localization, in that if a metal has disorder in the crystalline structure, then waves all wavelengths can be localized. In other words, a conductor can become an insulator, for which Anderson won a Nobel Prize in 19-something. And it's possible to get to the so-called localization length. In our language, it would be called attenuation length. The waves are attenuated, and you can see that for very low frequency waves are not attenuated very much. The localization length is very long. For very short waves, for very high frequency, also the localization length is very long. And it's for some intermediate wavelength, whereas perhaps the characteristic correlation length of the bottom is comparable to that of the wavelength, then localization very strong, so that the attenuation distance is very short. Okay. This is different from the so-called from the Bragg resonance phenomena, where the reflection, or the reflection is frequency selective. This is not frequency selective. It's for all frequency. The degree is different, but nevertheless, for all frequency, you have a very effective attenuation. And because of this, I like to do I like to demonstrate one problem in some detail, several a variety of problems has been treated. First of all, I like to study solitons in shallow water with random bottom. Now, solitons are not periodic waves, therefore they're not exactly the same problem as you have seen in the experiments. I like to look at this largely because of theoretical interest. Now, first of all, I start with Boussinesq equation with the familiar, this is a dimensionless Boussinesq equation with nonlinearity and dispersion parameter here. And the nonlinearity is defined as A over the mean depth, and mu is defined as the typical wave number times depth, and these two parameters are comparable by the usual definition. Now, the mean depth, the normalized mean depth, has a constant mean normalized to unity plus a small quantity plus a small fluctuation, B. This B is a random function of X with the property that it has zero mean and the stationary in space.
U
is the velocity, the mean horizontal velocity. This is Boussinesq velocity. I haven't cleaned it up. But, you know, this eta has U, but U and eta are related by relation that can be easily manipulated. Okay. All right. Now, I start from this equation. This, of course, is then a nonlinear equation with weak nonlinearity, weak dispersion, weak randomness. Therefore, this, in principle, is a stochastic differential equation. And it turns out in acoustics, in many other linear problems, it has been studied long before by Keller and other people, Joe Keller. And to say that it's known that for weak randomness, by some perturbation theory, it's possible to show that the randomness introduces some correction in the wave number. The imaginary part of the wave number corresponds to attenuation whose distance is inversely proportional to mean square of the randomness. Because of that, it suggests in this problem, it's possible to introduce a long scale, which is because I have assumed the randomness to have the height corresponding to order mu. Therefore, I will assume the long length scale to be characterized by mu squared. This is a long scale. This is consistent with the earlier way. All right. Therefore, I will introduce two kinds of scales. One is regular x. One is the long scale, slow variable. And by this method of multiple scales, in this is essentially equivalent to the so-called method of homogenization for periodic random media. And then let me show you some minor details. But because of the weak dispersion, a weak nonlinearity to the leading order, you have just ordinary wave equation. The solution is trivial. It is a function. I want to look at only forward propagating wave. Therefore, it is a function essentially of x minus t. X equals to t is essentially a characteristic direction. Okay. Now, but we don't know what this zeta is. But I just want to mention that this part is not directly forced by randomness. Therefore, it represents some sort of average wave, coherent wave. Now, for the next order, then randomness comes in as the forcing. But therefore, the next order correction must be random because of the random forcing. Therefore, I call it the incoherent wave. This involves multiple scattering, which can be easily solved by Green's function method. The Green's function is here, is trivial. And I can solve it. The character of this is the following. So because this is random, has zero mean, therefore, this incoherent part is random with zero mean. But nevertheless, it can radiate energy. Now, at the order mu squared, then I take the ensemble average. It turns out the ensemble average has the left-hand side is identical to the earlier problem. Therefore, there's a solvability problem, as we know. And now, because eta is linearly related to B. Therefore, this creates the correlation function of the random fluctuation. I would define the correlation of the random fluctuation to be gamma, which will be assumed to be stationary in space. Therefore, it's a function of the difference between x prime and x. Okay? And later on, I will make some explicit assumption later on. And invoking solvability, then you get the following problem. The problem in the moving coordinate, x minus x moving with the dimensional velocity square root of gh, namely the linearized long wave velocity, I will have a modified KdV equation like this. This x represents the long scale fetch, essentially the time of propagation of the wave, and the sigma is the moving coordinate. And the right hand side has to do proportional in order of magnitude to the correlation function, therefore proportional to the mean square. Now, gamma hat is a Fourier transform of the correlation function, and then there are some integrals. Notice that there are various kinds of derivatives. This first derivative means there's a randomness or cause a little adjustment of phase velocity. Now, it can be shown that all these coefficients are positive. Therefore, this introduces a slowing down of velocity. The velocity is slowed down. Secondly, there are diffusive terms. Therefore, this makes this equation a Korteweg-Burgers type of equation. You have this Burgers term. Now, this Burgers term consists not only of the simple derivative, but also integral of my battery is getting weak. This is weaker. All right. Then there's a further addition to dispersive term. You see, the dispersive term will have this this dispersive term, because it's on the right-hand side, and this p is an integral which is positive. Therefore, this creates a reduction of dispersion, rather than in contrast to the dispersion originally associated with the KdV equation. And all right. Now, let me specify, for explicit computation, let me specify to a Gaussian correlation function with the correlation length L. This is a very common kind of assumption in all kinds of random media. And then you have a very explicit expression of this modified KdE equation. The important thing is that it has all kinds of derivatives, Burgers term, and there's one phase velocity term, there's another integrated Burgers term, there's an integrated dispersion term. And now they're all proportional to d squared. D squared is essentially the mean square of the random fluctuation. Now, from this equation, it can be easily deduced that the total energy of the coherent wave is always reducing with the distance of propagation. Physically, it simply means that due to incoherent multiple scattering, energy is drained from the coherent wave, so that there's an effective damping of the phenomena. Okay, of the physics. Okay, now with this equation, a sort of analytical approximation can be done very easily. One, first of all, is for small randomness. Then some perturbation method that can be easily used. This is done a long time ago by the hydraulician Kulagin. Later on, done in lots of nonlinear problems, and then the so-called we can find out at after propagation distance, after certain propagation distance, which I denote by x over L, what is the manner the amplitude is attenuated. Let me recall that for linear waves, it is known in acoustics and in many, many physics problems that the attenuation of simple harmonic wave is exponential. In other words, if you have a sinusoidal wave train passing over a finite patch of random medium, then the transmission coefficient dies out exponentially with the distance, with the thickness, with the width of the randomness. Okay. Now, in this nonlinear case for transient wave, this is not a sinusoidal wave. It turns out that the attenuation is algebraic, not exponential. Here we have made certain comparison between the analytical approximation due to for small b and some numerical computation that by solving this integral differential equation completed numerically. you can see that for sufficiently small mean square, like d squared equals 0.05, the agreement between and approximation and numerical computation is very, very good. All right, then for a long time, it's possible to argue that the equation essentially reduces to that of Burgers' equation. Now, because Burgers' equation has an exact analytical solution for delta function input, therefore we use approximate the initial profile by a delta function of equal area, and compute the so-called localization length. Localization length is essentially we can define in some way the length of attenuation. Now it turns out that it's the agreement between the approximate solution by making use of the exact solution, known solution of Hoff and Kohl. On Burgers' equation agrees with the numerical solution very well. Okay, here these are just limiting solutions. Let me give you some numerical solutions for semi-infinite bet. Okay, let me emphasize that this coordinate sigma is x. This is somehow I thought I made a correction. This is x small x minus tau. This is a distance in this is distance measured in the moving coordinate. Suppose there's no randomness. Then in this moving coordinate, suppose I start with a soliton. This soliton will remain, will keep the same amplitude without any change. And not only that, because of the nonlinearity, it will move relatively to the moving coordinate at some finite speed, because we know the higher soliton has higher speed. Okay? Now let's see. For the case of very small randomness for fluctuations, there are two kinds of object phenomena. One is that as the soliton enters the semi-infinite random bed from zero onward, you can see that as it propagates forward, the amplitude decays, and not only that, it's slowed down. Otherwise, the distances between the solitons would be uniform, but nevertheless, it's slowed down. Okay, now for larger randomness, the slowing down is more severe. The decay is faster. Okay, let me go further to rather large randomness. And you can see that it's slowing down so much that the first wave has the fastest speed. Now, for very, very large randomness, then not only the decay is fast, but also the slowing down is so that the subsequent peaks are essentially not as fast as the initial peak. Yeah, these are the physical effects of this soliton propagation on a semi-infinite bed. Okay, now let me look at another numerical result. I want to look at the development of a soliton after it passes through a finite length. Finite length of a random bed. Here, this is a very short stretch, a short patch. X, the width is 5, width is 20, width is 30, width is 50. Okay, and for all of these, I also increase the randomness from 0.25 to 2.5. You can see that in this region. Well, of course, we know that with the randomness, the soliton is going to be flatter after transmission. It'd be flatter, wider, and lower. And then it ceases to be a soliton. Therefore, by inverse scattering theory, there should be fission. Okay? Now, we have computed, for example, for this case, we have one soliton fission, two solitons, three solitons, four solitons. But let me point out to you, the scale, vertical scales are all different. Actually, these solitons are much higher than the first. This is because the scales are very different in order to show them very clearly. Okay? It doesn't mean that for higher roughness, I have higher solitons. This is not the case at all. All right, and now it's possible to because after the numerical computation, the transmitted wave profile can be computed, And from that, you can make use of the known result of inverse scattering of Gardner and so forth in order to predict the number of solitons. It turns out that the number of solitons are essentially governed by in the plane of B squared, namely mean squared, and capital X. Capital X is the width of the soliton. In this plane, the demarcations are all hyperbolas according to the analytical theory of inverse scattering. Okay. All right. Now this is one application which this paper is going to appear in Physical Review E reasonably shortly. And let me now explain to you some similar work on intermediate depth. For intermediate depth, we have done the following. One is a two-dimensional wave, intermediate depth, narrow-banded wave. Second is two horizontal dimension, therefore three-dimensional motion, narrow-banded wave. Now, it turns out that using the same kind of method for narrow-banded wave with the central carrier frequency, the evolution equation, is essentially can be reduced to the cubic Schrodinger equation with a damping term. This damping term is proportional to this beta. Beta is proportional. This is our normalized form. Beta I, the imaginary part beta I, is proportional to the correlation function, and in particular to the mean square. Okay? So this is the sign of this coefficient depends upon whether the water mean depth is a KH larger than 1.37 or less than 1.37. This is the classical result. Okay, well, of course, we're only interested in the case where we have reasonably deep water, so that there is some residual effects of Benjamin Fair instability. And for this case, if you choose Gaussian correlation, it's possible to explicitly evaluate this damping coefficient in this form, which depends on KH and K and the mean square of the roughness, as well as correlation length of the all right, let me show you the effect that we have done some computation. One of them is on Benjamin Fair instability, and where it can be shown that it's unstable if the damping coefficient, namely roughness, is sufficiently small. But as time progresses, the damping in the region shrinks, as we can expect it. This is very easy to show. And if we chose an unstable initial disturbance, a periodic disturbance for Stokes wave, and you see that initially it's possible to see this. If it's a uniform Stokes wave, there will be exponentially decay. With sideband, initially for some chosen theta, you can sideband still grows initially and then decays. It exchanges energy with the carrier frequency in a way that involves both growth as well as decay. So this is an indication that, of course, the Benjamin Fair instability in this case is there but weakened, nevertheless, by the damping, and the damping eventually kills out everything. Of course, you have a sufficiently large damping, you will not have this initial sideband growth at all. All right, now we have done other kinds of computation. For example, in this moving coordinate, the time diagram, suppose I have a envelope packet, which is not a soliton envelope. I want to let it go through a finite patch written by this, expressed by this slanted belt, because it's moving coordinate. This fixed belt stationary in space is slanted in this coordinate system. And we note that if there's a long distance between the initial position and the random belt, you can have soliton fission according to the theory of Zakharov. But afterwards, what happens? And initially, over this narrow width, we will have some change of form. And afterwards, of course, is a soliton over smooth bed. Then the results of the analytical results of inverse scattering apply. Let me just show you one example. This is here the initial wave packet. It evolves into different kinds of solitons, and this white belt is the area where damping happens very fast. This is why it's white, because the amplitude changes very fast. Yeah, reason is that. Afterwards, it has all kinds of evolution. This indicates that for this particular initial condition, after passing through this random belt, there are two solid envelopes happening here. And we have done other kinds of computations, but I don't want to go any further. Let me give you the last example, which is a two space dimensional. The equations are deduced for narrow banded wave with two space dimensional modulation. But I want to look at the one special case of uniform Stokes wave without modulation impinging on a triangular random bed. This, of course, then this sort of if this triangular bed is reasonably slender, then this parabolic approximation applies. And here it's possible to also deduce this damping coefficient, which I will show you the general form later on. But notice that this is these are two space coordinates. Both are slow coordinates. This x is essentially time-like coordinate. And now, for Gaussian correlation of the following kind, where this c is the distance r minus r prime, it's possible to deduce explicitly the damping coefficient beta, which is normalized form, something like this. These coefficients depend on some sort of complicated Bessel functions. So in other words, these all can be explicitly evaluated. With this numerical computation of the problem of Stokes wave diffracted by a triangular patch of random bottom. And, okay, now first of all, the triangle is indicated here. It's from the distance. I'm drawing only one half of the whole horizontal space. The incident waves are coming from this, from here to here. The incident wave also comes from here to here. And between the distance x from 0 to 5, there is a triangular region on the bed, which is the full triangle is about this size. Okay? You can see that depending on how rough it is, if it is reasonably of intermediate roughness, you initially have some amplitude decay, but the linear theory, according is a characteristic of this linear Schrodinger equation, that you have diffraction. One minute. You have some diffraction patterns on the side. Okay. Now, if you have a rougher bed, according to the linear theory, you have, of course, a much faster attenuation directly over the random bed. But in the wake, the wave energy is recovered. And there's a diffraction pattern on the right, on one side. This is just one half of the whole picture. Now, with the nonlinearity, however, the features are somewhat different in that you can see very deep holes following straight lines. This is for rough, very intermediate roughness. This is for very rough sea bottom. The number of these troughs, the straight line troughs, increases with randomness and deepens with randomness. Now, this is the top view. You can see these straight line wakes, in the wakes of the triangle. Now, but it's interesting that we have compared the troughs with the exact profile of dark solitons. Dark solitons are, these are dark solitons in space. Okay? Dark solitons, as far as I know before, it used to be in waterways, it was a sort of a mathematical solution. I think this is one place, at least in this idealized physical problem, it appears. Okay, so I think my time is up, but I think this kind of method, this so-called the method of homogenization, can be useful for this type of problem. Previously, many physicists solved this kind of problem by using techniques they're familiar with. In particular, diagrammatic method is very, very complicated to me. I found this method to be much more effective. And as a result, I think it's possible to look at several other problems in the future. For example, in particular, in coastal oceanography, of course, it's very important to know how random waves with broad band is affected by random depth, by random fluctuations. I would think the first step would have to be the incorporation of the Zakharov's integral equation method with this kind of a multiple scale method. Okay? And there are other practical problems, some of which have been studied to some extent before, because the cloud of bubbles, both the size and the distances between them are random. It's useful to use this method or its extensions to study the effective disorder. Now, in other kinds of engineering endeavor, elastic waves scattered by imperfections, so many of them are in disorder, which are useful. And there's one problem. I hope in the audience somebody can teach me something about nonlinear fiber optics theory. I think that the kind of theory, I think this in fiber optics, as far as I know, very often fibers are extended over hundreds of kilometers, some irregularities due to cross-sectional irregularity or the junction must happen. And so far, the energy losses in fiber optics are dealt with very, very empirically. I think that if somebody can do some theoretical work on fiber optics, this will be some industrial application. Okay, thank you very much. This is my talk.